I have here on the line Mr. Rick Weinman, a remarkable healer, teacher, and founder of an amazing healing modality called Vortex Healing Divine Energy Therapy. He's also an author whose published works include Your Hands Can Heal, Breaking the Illusion, and most recently, Awakening Through the Veils, A Seeker's Guide. I've been fortunate enough to study with Rick, and I'm glad to have this opportunity with him to share with you his work and his life and just all the remarkable things that he's been up to. So, hello, Rick. How are you?
Hi, Nathan. How are you?
Very good. Very good to have you on the line here. First of all, I just want to get a little bit of background on you. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Did you always know that you were going to be a healer and be doing this kind of work?
No, I actually thought I was going to be more in the engineering, mathematics kind of field. I was a bit of a math wizard growing up, you know, kind of thing. The teacher would put the math on the board and I would basically know it without having to study it. And but I was at Columbia University in the middle of all war stuff, and the teaching quality there for the undergraduates wasn't very good, and I had this great little philosophy professor, and I thought, oh, that looks like more fun. And so I dropped out of that, and years later actually went back into a master's in computer science, but you know, the pull of what I needed to do, you know, took me back out again, and here I am.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about that. What was that pull that took you back out of engineering?
Well, I had been doing some part-time healing and lots of meditation. And mm-hmm. before I went into the computer science thing. And going into the computer science was sort of a cop-out at that point in my life because I just didn't want to have to deal with, you know, living on the edge for my entire life. And I knew science, I could go back and do it and sort of, you know, be safe, be secure and all that kind of stuff. And it just wasn't my path though. And actually there was a whole lot of divine intervention, interestingly enough. At one point, when I was first studying to go into the computer science, I got into overload. It really became too much because I hadn't done it in so many years, and I was taking all these classes at once. One night I just gave up, and I was about to plop into this big armchair, and I had given up. And somewhere between giving up and my butt hitting the chair, this little twinkly thing came into the top of my head, came into my body, and whatever it did, it changed my mind. The next moment, you know, suddenly I wanted to do it. I was happy to do it. I was determined to do it, to finish it. And then I got into a program, actually, with a teaching assistantship, and things were sort of going along until I wasn't supposed to be doing that anymore, and then a similar kind of event happened, and out I went. And a week later, a newspaper article appeared about my healing work. I was barely doing any at the time, and the next thing I knew, I was a full-time healer. So,
wow, fantastic!
Obviously, I was supposed to be doing that, and not the computer science.
And so even then, while you were doing computer science, you had a sensitivity to these kinds of divine interplays.
On a life level, I wasn't really in very good shape. I had, in 1971, there was a lot of emotional trauma going on. My father had died and my mother had gone into a black hole, and I just sort of escaped. I went to Europe and hitchhiked around, slept in farmers' fields, and got way, way, you know, way out of body, but was still quite functional, amazingly, and so, you know, that was sort of the background through which I started to do a lot of meditation, and meditation led to healing. But, you know, it was living on the edge. And after quite a number of years of that, I got tired of living on the edge. But, you know, that's where I was sent back to, and then the edge became became successful, just doing what I'd always been doing.
And so how did you get from there to what I know you through, which is your work in this modality that you call Vortex Healing Divine Energy Therapy? Connect the dots for me here. How did you get from being in this kind of out-of-body place and starting to do some work on yourself and then going back into engineering or computer science? And how did you wind up where you are now?
Well, I was living in Tucson, and I started to become a bit psychic. It just sort of happened on its own. Well, being out of body like that, and I was also in starvation at the time, so my whole nervous system went through a whole kind of readjustment, of a whole other level of tuning. And through that, as I hitchhiked around Europe, I started to experience a new kind of freedom, but it was, you know, way out there. And when I ended up where the air was dry and electric, something started to turn on my third eye, and I started to do readings and got interested in healing. And I met some people who were working with a different healing art called Jinshin Jitsu, a lovely body balancing art. Works sort of similar to acupuncture but without needles, and I wanted to do a trade with one of them, and I needed something to trade, so I came up with my own sort of healing thing at that time, which became the basis of my book, Your Hands Can Heal, and started to give classes in that, and as I said, well, I studied Jinshin as well, and at one point down the road ended up with a full-time practice. And in the middle of that practice, I had this experience, which I wasn't looking for. And most of the major things that have happened in my life were been things like this that I haven't been looking for. And basically, the divine hit me on the head and said, you know, this is what you're going to do now. And it happened I was staying at my mother's house, and I was doing this sort of simple exercise to clear this room before going to sleep in it. And I discovered I used to clear a room by just spreading my field out through the room, and it's very slow and not all that efficient, but I discovered this connection to a past life energy that was very magical, and I could just sort of pull on this energy out of the universe and intend it to go and do something like clean a room, kind of like real magic stuff, and it would do it and do this fantastic job of it. And I was doing that, and as I pulled on the place I usually pulled on, it was like it opened a trap door in the universe, and suddenly I was standing in this huge interdimensional vortex with my feet on the ground and the rest of me out in sort of interdimensional space, and this voice starts talking to me out of the vortex, saying that this is something I've worked with in past lives, and it was time for me to start to work with it again, and gave me some instructions, which I followed, and suddenly I was, as a full-time healer and knew what my capacity was for, suddenly I was doing these fantastic healings that I know I couldn't have touched before. And for instance, within a week, a man came to me who had what here we call chronic fatigue. In England, they call it ME. And he had this for about 20 years, and he had been doing Jinshin on himself for about every day for that time. Kept the symptoms down, was never healed. He came in, and by the time he got off the table, he knew it was gone. And it was gone. You know, this one session, cleared him right up. And then I went to India to see a spiritual teacher named Papaji. And I got to do healing work on him, which was, you know, a lovely thing for me at the time. And he would direct me to people that he'd want me to do work on. And one of them, for instance, was a man that had acute leukemia. I was getting blood transfusions, the whole works. And after three sessions, all of his blood work started to clear up. And he actually became normal. So I think my phone is running low. I'll just keep talking while I go and get switch phones here.
Okay.
Another woman had two cases of hepatitis that she'd gotten on an excursion with a Papaji. And she, I could see these two viral swirls in her liver. And she was flat on her back. They told her she would have this for life. And after four sessions, I saw these viral swirls disappear. And all of her energy came flooding back, and she was back on her feet and seemed quite normal. So I was having these kind of amazing healings and that I know I couldn't have touched before. And people were wanting to learn it. Now, I didn't know how I was going to possibly be able to teach it, because I had been doing all this energetic work and meditation and had become a very good channel for an energy that would be this strong, and I didn't know how I could get other people to bring something like this in. And I went to meditation and asked the guide within this vortex that was the source of this healing energy, who called itself Merlin, and he said, yes, you can do it as a 5-day training. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll try it. And scheduled a class, and sort of more as a test than anything else. And people seemed to be able to channel it. I hadn't realized originally that I didn't really have to worry about giving them the power to run this healing energy, that was all Merlin's job, Merlin being this divine being that was the source of this whole Merlin lineage of magical, transformational healing and awakening. And I was just there as a vehicle that Merlin could work through. I didn't have to myself do anything more than explain how to access stuff, and we would do transmissions, and Merlin would do all the work. So then we were off and running, and very soon I realized that my healing practice was thinning out, and which was a good thing, because suddenly I was having to do a lot of teaching, and would have been sad to have to tell people, oh, well, I can't treat you anymore. And it was all just taken care of. And that's how we got to here. Vortex healing, divine energy healing.
Okay. And what was it like at that point when you had this thing, this package of energy that you could use and you could teach other people to use, and yet it was very new? And I take it you'd never done anything like this before. What was it like to start basically a whole modality and a whole lineage from nothing?
Well, one doesn't know that that's what one is doing. one is just sort of, you know, starts by giving a class and going, oh that seems to work. That's good. And so now, before all this came in, when I was just doing healing work, and I was still very out of body and stuff, I was sitting meditating one night, and I had this vision. And in this vision, it seemed that I was going to be the center of something immense. And it was, from where I was at the time, it was literally crushing. It was like how I could feel the power involved in it and the vastness of it. And my thought was, how could I possibly ever carry that? And this little voice came in and whispered into my consciousness and just said, you'll have help. And was the only hint I ever had of what was going to transpire. And so it grew from one class, you know, and to, you know, many classes, and eventually I had to bring in another teacher to help because there was more than what I could do. And Merlin had presented me with a student who was capable of teaching, which became Anthony. He was the first next teacher of it. And it just kept growing. But in my mind, it was still, all along, it was still a healing art. I had a background as a healer. You know, I had this idea of sort of enlightenment as sort of this long-range goal, so to speak. You know, it was something that we all strive for, and you know, and eventually, you know, something maybe happens. And you know, and you know, there's this evolutionary process, and you know, in the healing, I saw healing as this critical role in the evolutionary process. And you kind of, and in my mind, you just kept getting clearer and clearer and clearer until there was nothing left to clear. And then enlightenment would set in. So those are my early misconceptions about how all that worked. Until at some point, Merlin actually facilitated awakening here, and then I saw that none of it was remotely like whatever I had fantasized.
Gotcha.
And that actually, you know, all divine lineages are ultimately about spiritual awakening, ultimately about, you know, about sort of God realization, if you like. And that had been the plan all along. And that I'd been getting ripe in the background, as were students to the classes. They were being ripened in the background as well. And that the background divine intention in the lineage was for any students who really wanted to be able to awaken, you know, through what was offered. And so at that point, it became not just a healing modality, but a healing modality and an awakening path, and which is what it is today.
Okay, so it's huge, actually. That's
huge.
There's not, and I take it that's part of the immenseness that you felt kind of coming your way when that voice told you you'd have a little bit of help. Is that right?
No,
or is there more?
No, the immenseness, I think, more has to do with a lineage holder, that on an energetic and consciousness level, there's this sort of carrying of the lineage. Where, you know, it's like, let's say you're teaching a class. It could be a dance class. You know, if you're a really good teacher of that, you're not just up there talking, but there's some way that you are actually holding that space, that there's some energetic interface that happens into all the people that are in the room. And I remember in Tucson, I took this one day dance class with this woman who was a client of mine, and you know, and never, she was kind of a spacey, out there, you know, always late, you know, always in her head, kind of person, and the moment she took the floor to start to teach her dance class, poof, she came in and she created this field and was in, you know, and held it. And it really shocked me, you know, that, you know, the way it came out of nowhere for her. And so it's like that. And for me, I'm not just carrying the classes that I'm teaching. They're, you know, fundamentally, I'm carrying the space that's this whole lineage energy consciousness that is sort of supporting all the students of the lineage. Now, at the same time, you know, the other teachers are participating in that, and even the students are participating in that, because it becomes a relationship between the lineage you know, and any person involved with it. You know, just as in a someone who joins a church, they're in some relationship, you know, to Christ. You know, that becomes part of the energy structure of that church. So in the same way, you know, all the students develop, end up having, you know, some kind of energetic and consciousness relationship to lineage, which essentially means Merlin, and yet in some way, in order for that to function on the planet, because Merlin's no longer alive, you know, my system is sort of integrated into that, and ends up carrying that. And it's not that it's a burden. I don't experience it as a burden. If anything, it's also very energizing. It's just looked at from where I was, you know, 20 years ago. The idea of carrying that kind of energetic space, you know, was overwhelming.
And, yeah, it would look overwhelming from there, from 20 years prior. So there's a bunch of great things that you bring up here. I want to get to all of it. And one thing I want to cover before we go any further is, you know, your use of the name or the term Merlin, which, you know, some people I've found really resonate with, and they love the idea that vortex healing is associated with Merlin, and other people have a little bit more of a skeptical stance to it. I was just wondering, what would you say to somebody who had trouble with the Merlin concept that you present?
Well, first I would point out that people tend to think of Merlin as a particular human man who was associated with King Arthur, and my perception is that there was such a man. And that man was one of the teachers of the lineage, but that's not the source of the lineage. That the source of the lineage is actually this divine being, and originally this being was actually incarnated onto the planet as an avatar, a divine incarnation. And after he died, he set up some kind of structure he actually set up something while he was on the planet, but then after he died, he continued to set up this structure for this divine lineage to eventually take hold on the Earth. And for whatever reason, England, the area that became England, was where this was to be started. And he came to a man who was in meditation, you know, and close to awakening at the time. And the particular divine nature of this divine path, if you will, or energy, has this quality of magical transformation. So he needed a word in that language that would carry that kind of vibration, and the word that best suited that as a name was apparently Merlin. So he introduced himself to this man in meditation as Merlin, and through whatever he gave this man, the man woke up, had his own spiritual awakening, and began to work with vortex healing, and started this tradition that anyone that would become a teacher of the lineage that would reach a certain level of it that was considered sufficiently one with Merlin, the avatar, they would take on the name Merlin as a title. So that Merlin in King Arthur's days, that name was his title, just like someone who studies medicine takes on the title of doctor. He became a Merlin of the Merlin lineage. And so, you know, we're not... The lineage isn't focused around that man. It's focused around this divine being that has chosen to call itself Merlin. And the quality that becomes very evident for anyone who works with vortex healing is that it has this quality of divine magic. It just, and especially at deeper levels of it, what it is able to do on a on a magical transformational level is just almost unbelievable. Even on a very basic level, by the time a person takes like the second class of vortex healing, they can take a musical instrument and do a healing on it and transform its sound, which is remarked on in all the articles on vortex healing. There's a magazine in England, for instance, called Kindred Spirit, a very big New Age magazine, and the editor at the time put us through various hoops and then basically tested us with bringing in a professional violinist and her violins and running the guitar and I transformed a few of them, and it's very quick. It takes less than a minute. And one of the violins, the sound changed so deeply that it brought tears to the woman's eyes. Because this is a violin that she had learned on when she was a child, and she somehow couldn't play it anymore. I mean, you imagine the process of studying and the frustration, all that emotional energy had built up in the violin on the one hand, and I could see that her relationship with the violin wasn't good anymore either. So we cleared, I cleared all of that out. When I say we, I mean me and Merlin, cleared all of that out and sort of readjusted her relationship to it. And then we looked at this transformational thing on the violin itself, and you know, it was just remarkable. And then because I had a student with me at the time, which was actually Anthony before he became a teacher, they had him do an instrument as well. He did the guitar. And when they heard that change, they realized it wasn't just some special trick or ability that I had, but that it could actually be taught. That this was actually, this magical transformational stuff could actually be taught. And so the musical instruments are a really nice way to see how magical it is. But in fact, the first violin I ever did that way was a friend of mine, was a violinist in Ireland, and I did a quick thing on her violin like that. And when she next went to her orchestra to practice, the orchestra leader asked her if she'd gotten a new violin. That's how different it sounded.
Fabulous. And so what, I mean, that definitely gives a sense of, as you say, the magical transformation, that on a very noticeable physical level, there's a transformation happening, you know, within whatever the physicality is of the violin or the musical instrument. And so on a human level, what are some of the things you've been most impressed by vortex healing in terms of, you know, physically helping people to heal? And also, I understand that there's a large emotional component to this as well. Like, what's really stood out for you as far as what vortex healing has been able to do?
Well, I mentioned how when I first went to India, I found myself healing these long-term chronic diseases like the hepatitis and the acute leukemia. And, you know, so through the years, you know, I see a lot of that kind of stuff, not just from me, but, you know, stories from our students of these miraculous kinds of healings on every level, including emotional. We had just as an example, we had a basic student who is a Reiki master as well, who had this woman brought to her who was in clinical depression, couldn't work anymore and so on, and she had to be sort of dragged in and put on the table. And in the middle of the third session, the student knew that Reiki, you know, wouldn't be able to touch this. It just, you know, and so she used her basic vortex healing. And in the middle of the third session, something just cracked, and the woman started laughing. And somehow it just, something cracked through her depression, and she was able to go back to work. And it's things like that that just remarkable. I've seen in myself for emotional issues that I've worked with, just the change and drama and the reactivity around it, and just see people's lives change in a way that just has so much grace in it. It's just unbelievable.
Lovely. And so what do you think, what is it that makes vortex healing such a powerful healing art? What is it that you're doing that other modalities maybe aren't doing?
Now, that's a very good question, because we're working with this divine energy and consciousness, and most healing modalities actually aren't. Most of them are working, like something like Reiki is working with more of what I would call a spiritual energy. And Reiki is very nice. It was designed to be easy to be taught, easy to, you know, for it to get around, to make the idea of healing sort of very common, and anyone can learn it, and or really anyone can teach it. But in doing that, it gave up, you know, that you might say the ability to go deep. With vortex healing, there are very few people I meet who are innately built with the energetics that could actually create, be a vehicle for these kinds of transmissions. Because of the level of power involved in divine power and the kind of shakti that system needs to be able to move, to be able to give vortex healing to somebody else. And with that, what's created is something that isn't just sitting on the surface of the energy system, but something that gets bridged and built into, very deeply into the energy system, so that when that student goes to then do vortex healing, they're not just sort of sending energy at something. They're actually bridging that energy directly into that person's system. And so that just enables it to access, you know, much deeper, kind of like the way that a higher frequency, not the best analogy I was going towards there, but so we have this ability to bridge. And a story that would illustrate what that means is that I like to give is, if you think of, let's say, you have a church and there are two priests there that are doing healings, and one of them's been doing it for like 50 years and doesn't really have his heart in it. It's Sunday, you know, he really wants to go home and watch the game, but you know, he needs to be there. And he's going through the motions, but because of all the years he's doing it, something happens anyway. But it's not all that deep. And then this other priest, this young priest, is still in this very devotional space in relation to Christ, and just prays to be this vehicle for Christ's healing to come through him. And you know, and as he's doing a healing on a congregant, you know, is in this deep place of surrender and prayer and, you know, and let go for Christ to come through him. And, so here you have two priests who are working with the exact same energy or the exact same consciousness, the Christ consciousness, the Christ energy. And yet there's no question that the second priest, through his own surrender and devotion, is going to bring Christ in, going to bridge Christ in a much deeper way. So whatever the transmissions we do with vortex healing creates that kind of, like, second priest kind of situation where when the student goes to channel, that energy is being bridged in that way, whether that student has that kind of devotion or not. Now, if they also have their own innate kind of surrender that way, or psychic abilities, all of that, of course, could make it better yet. But even without that, someone who's, you know, psychically blind and has never worked with energy, they're still going to bridge in the energy on a very deep level. So that bridging is one major factor, probably the biggest factor. The second factor is that other healing modalities, even those that are working with divine energy, they're typically working with either a divine energy or a divine consciousness. Of course, the two are related. Divine energy has divine consciousness, and divine consciousness is going to carry divine energy. And yet they work differently in the system. Divine energy is more going to do stuff in the energy system, where divine consciousness is going to do stuff more directly to consciousness. As you change consciousness, the energy changes. As you change the energy, the consciousness changes. So they work with each other, but we work with both and simultaneously. So we can, even at basic level, for instance, we can channel this divine energy into the acupuncture system and do very, very nice clearings in the acupuncture system and harmonizing and balancing that way without any acupuncture training, because the divine intelligence is also very well bridged in, and it knows where to go in the acupuncture system and what to energize and what to clear and, you know, and so on. But let's say a person's lung energy is weak because of some particular emotional issue. So you can keep clearing that lung energy as someone who's working with some other energy modality would do. But that emotional issue is going to keep recreating the blockage there. So for us, we end up clearing that lung energy, but simultaneously we start bridging the divine consciousness into that issue that's creating that blockage, so that the whole situation holds better. And then as that issue comes out of the lungs, the lung energy naturally moves better as well. So you've got two things going on. One is the bridging, and the other is the both the energy and the divine intelligence and the divine consciousness. And the other is that we're working with divine energy and divine consciousness at the same time. And all this is just a basic level class. It just takes off from there.
Right. Okay. And so there's this, in a sense, it's what you're saying is that there's a holistic quality to the work, in terms of not just working with the energy, but also working with the consciousness, and bringing all that together to create sort of a synergistic healing that transcends one or the other. Is that correct?
Yes, but that's the lesser of the two aspects. The bridging is it's taking that and being able to bridge that incredibly deep into the system. And because of the way that this is created in the energy system, at every level of class, that the whole healing modality gets bridged deeper into the system, which then enables students, even working with the same tools, to then bridge deeper into whoever they're doing healing on. And then we take that a step further, which is that the healing modality and the awakening aspect of lineages are not separate. And it turns out that the deepest healing tools can only be given to people once they're awake, because when you awaken spiritually, your whole energy system goes to this other level that enables a much deeper level of healing tool to be imprinted into the system. So, well, you want to get people these healing tools. How do you get them? Well, you wake them up first. So then you can see then how the awakening aspect of the lineage comes in. To the healing, ties into the healing aspect, because when we can create that kind of awakening in people, the healing tools that we can then give them, are just on a whole other level altogether.
And that actually goes segues right into the next question that I had for you, which was, how, in what way, or how is it that vortex healing facilitates awakening, and how would that compare to something else, more traditional lineages out there, such as Zazen or doing Vipassana meditation. What is your approach, and how does that compare or differ to these other lineages out there?
Well, these traditional lineages all started in a time where we didn't have the kind of acceleration that we have today. And the way that they worked was by sort of working from the outside in. You started with your breath, which is a very physical tool, and you watched it in one way or another, would end up moving through all these layers and layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of, of conditioning in the system, just in order to begin to create some quietness in the system where real meditation could begin. And, you know, we're not talking about that, you know, you get quiet and then you wake up. We're talking about just getting quiet so you can begin to meditate. And if you have an awake teacher, to begin to be able to try to tune into their awakeness to align with them. But we live in a time of incredible acceleration where another way is possible. And that other way is this, that rather than trying to clear all the conditioning first in order to create some space in which awakening becomes possible, so that you're sitting for 50 years first just creating that space. I stayed in a Zen ashram for a week once when I was in my 20s. And, the meditation was you sat in front of a white wall, and it was in San Francisco, and you counted your exhalations, 1, 2, 3, up till 10. And when you got to 10, you start all over again. And I asked them, well, how long do you do that for? And they said basically, 10, 15, 20 years. and then you move to the next phase, which is just watching your breath. And then, another 10, 15 years later, then you would just watch. And, it seemed a little slow.
you could say that.
And not that at the time I had anything better, but I just didn't want to spend the next 15 years, just counting my exhalations. And although it's very powerful, I'm doing it. But today, at least within the lineage that I teach, within this Murmur lineage, it's clear that the intention is working differently. And what the intention is to wake people up first. To wake people up quickly, and then use that space where you've already now got beingness in the core, you've already got silence in the core, to help to quiet everything else out, to broaden the awakening, to deepen it. And there's two reasons for that, you might say. One is that, first of all, people get to wake up and sort of, be done with their incarnational journeys a lot faster. And it's easier. It's, let's say, put it in sort of kind of a very loose analogy. Let's say, in order to really live from a free space, you've got 50 pounds of conditioning you need to move out of your system first. Well, from a non-awake place, moving those 50 pounds out is very, very slow because the ego consciousness is going to hold it like glue. So you've got to keep trying to pry that away when you've got this glue trying to hold on to it and recreate it to support its own ego structure. But if you awaken first, then it becomes much easier to move this conditioning because there's nothing holding it in place. It's just leftover conditioning. It's just these habits of the body and mind. And so it becomes much easier to create a much freer space long term to actually awaken a person in the short term and let them do the purifying, if you like, from there. The second point of doing that is that it seems that part of divine intention for the planet as a whole is this kind of acceleration. And anytime anybody wakes up in any lineage, it helps the whole thing to speed up and evolve. So one way to help the whole planetary evolution is to actually wake up as many people as quickly as you can. And so this lineage is using the awakening aspect of it to do that very quickly, to do a lot of awakening very quickly, and both for the student's own sake, for the sake of the lineage as well, because that empowers the lineage when we have more and more awake people in it, and for the planet as a whole, because it makes it easy for everything to evolve as more and more awake people come online.
Fantastic. And speaking of awakening, you have a book that just came out recently called Awakening Through the Veils, A Seeker's Guide. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What is it about, and specifically, who do you feel would really benefit from reading it?
So I knew one day I would write this book when my own awakening began, but I knew I wasn't going to even begin it until I felt like I was in, I moved along that path deeply enough to be able to write a good book about it, a book that would really help people, that could sort of cover the territory that was needed to be covered. And I waited until the Merlin, divine guide within my lineage, told me it was time. And then I started to write it. And the book is in two parts. And the first part of the book more talks about all the preconceptions and misconceptions and about awakening and what we're bringing to awakening and the nature of the path and this kind of more general stuff, which acts as a nice introduction for anybody who's either new to it or people who have been on it the path for some time. They'll find new kinds of information there as well. And the second part of it, though, the book was meant not to just be sort of a general talk about awakening, which is what a lot of the material out there is people talking about their own experiences of oneness and such. But the book was also meant to actually be a vehicle to help people to actually awaken. Not just to talk about it, but to actually practically facilitate it. And so, aside from what we do in the beginning, where we talk about all the confusion that can arise with awakening, and how it moves to the background and so on. In the process of my own awakening, Merlin has created a map, and he's taken me through my own phases of awakening very carefully, step by step, enabling me to see each step and understand each step, so that first of all, I can teach it like that one step at a time, instead of being up there in front of a group of people at different levels of awakening. We can take a group that's ripe for awakening and then take that whole group and move them into basic awakening in a single class. Now we have a group of people that are all at the same level, and we can take them to the next level in the next class. And we can do that because of this map that Merlin created through the way that he unfolded my own awakening. And so the book, first of all, presents that map. So people that are already awake can use that map as a way of sort of orienting themselves and seeing where they've come from, understanding where they've come from, and seeing where they need to go, so it makes it easier for them to get there. But also, in presenting the map, the second half of the book shows people how to actually move along that map, including from wherever they are now before awakening, how to actually get themselves ripe enough to have that awakening, how to have that awakening, how to go deeper from there, step by step. The same path that I've walked becomes a sharing of that to a general audience through this book.
Fabulous. And so what do you foresee now, a little bit further down the road in terms of vortex healing and your authorship, and what's the best yet to come here?
I have not a clue. I can feel that right now. My wife described it well. She said it's as if there's this rising wave, where suddenly there are all these things coming together, and for vortex healing. So, for instance, recently I was invited to talk at this large conference in Argentina, where the only other two speakers were Deepak Chopra and Carolyn Mace, both of whom are much more well-known than I am. And that happened almost synchronistically with the same time that the book was coming out. There's been, there's just been a lot of that kind of stuff coming together recently. And so it feels like vortex healing has been much more sort of in the background, less known. And it feels like there's some divine intention to have it more out there, which could create a problem for me in that, you know, we only have a limited number of teachers, and that's not going to change. And we're only equipped to handle, you know, limited numbers of students. I mean, if I showed up on Oprah one day, you know, I wouldn't be able to handle whatever would happen from that. you know, we don't have enough teachers to handle what kind of response that would be. And yet, it seems like Merlin is pushing this more out into the public. And so how he will manage that, you know, it's not my show. I'm just sort of the servant here. I'm just serving the lineage, and divine intention is moving it along. I wasn't looking to be lineage holder. It's, you know, it's all operating from a much deeper level. I'm just surrendering and you know, doing what I can to make it all work. And I know that the healing, the level of healing that has just keeps evolving as well, in terms of what has just come in the last year. It just has taken vortex healing to a whole new level. I couldn't have seen 2 years ago what's happening now, and I really don't have a clue about where this is going to go. And I don't you know, concern myself with it, because no matter how much I might sit and think about it, I know I'm not going to come up with anything. So if I need to see something, then I'm shown it. So for instance, we do when I first started teaching awakening classes, you know, one theory out there that I have never gone along with is that, you know, is that awakening is sort of a random phenomenon, and there's no way to know, you know, who's going to wake up, or and that there's nothing we can do to facilitate that, because that's just the ego trying to do something, and awakening happens from beyond the ego. And so that's sort of one philosophy out there, and the philosophy has value, and yet in each awakening class that I gave in the beginning, when you'd only have one or two people wake up at the end, by the end of the class, Merlin would always show me who was going to wake up. And it was no randomness there at all. You know, it was quite known on a deeper level, you know, who was ready to wake up and who was going to wake up. And it would be sometimes a shock. I remember this one class where this woman was starting to feel angry. And each day of this awakening class, she was getting more and more angry. And she even came up to me and said, "I know what's going on, but every day I'm just getting angrier and angrier." And she was one of the people that Merlin said was going to wake up in the class. And I'm thinking, you know, how the heck is she going to wake up when she is so full of whatever's coming up for her that there's no silence there at all? And then the particular meditation came along, and Merlin popped in and said, "You know, and this is where she wakes up." And I just watched her through the meditation, and Merlin sort of created this back door, you know, past her anger from underneath it, and pop, and she was different. Same with another woman in another class who I was told was going to wake up. This woman had the most babbling mind I had ever seen. And in my mind, you know, you need a certain kind of silence. You need to be able to achieve a certain silence to wake up. That's what I thought at that time. And I said to Merlin, you know, because Merlin said, well, this woman's going to wake up in the class. And I, a few times, went back to him and said, are you sure she's going to wake up? And in the middle of all that babbling, all of a sudden, she woke up. And she went from this babbling mind trip to looking like this incarnated Buddha in one moment. It was just mind-boggling, just mind-boggling. So for me, this is how I've always seen the universe. It's all play of divine intention, and divine knows what it's doing. It knows what it's intending. It knows what's coming. And when I say that, I don't mean it as a, in a fatalistic way, because, you know, it's all unfolding spontaneously. All of this is happening spontaneously, and it's happening, and whatever that divine intention is not separate from our own deepest place of being. So it's our own unfolding in the moment that's creating this intention and unfolding the universe, you know, as it goes. It's not just simply imposed. But the ego is just along for the ride at the same time. You know, it's sort of a contradiction. You know, it's our own deepest place, and yet that place has nothing to do with our ego.
Right, and the ego will tend to resist what it is that this deeper being is intending and creating.
Not necessarily. Because the ego is really along for the ride. It's just adapting more than anything else. So like in basic awakening, for instance, you lose the core sense of I and the heart, which is where you've always gone to identify yourself. You know, because the heart is sort of the center of identity. And that core place of I disappears in basic awakening. So whatever's left of the ego, you know, basically adapts to that, you know, and just sort of accesses its sense of its ego self in a different way. You know, so it just keeps adapting. If it's confused, which happens a lot after basic awakening, there can be a lot of confusion because there's this place of being, and yet the mind is still doing everything the mind always did. And yet the ego just adapts to it. It may adapt to it through confusion, but it's still just sort of adapting. And it doesn't know where to resist because life is just sort of happening. And what it's doing is it's just trying to survive.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Lovely. Well, thank you so much, Rick, for taking some time to share your work and your path and your insight. I really appreciate your taking the time, and I wish you all the best in all the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.